This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In a commentary about the meaning of race in America today, writer John Edgar Wideman asks some challenging questions.
How can we talk about ourselves without falling into the trap of race, without perpetuating the terms of a debate we can't win? If we're different, who decides the meaning of that difference? Who shall create its form, and who shall benefit from it? Common ground. How can we seek it, understand it, without slipping into talk about race?
Words that argue that race is important in all of our lives, every day, whether we want it to be or not, whether we acknowledge it or not. John Edgar Wideman's essay is part of a new four-part documentary series called Matters of Race. It airs on PBS stations this week, beginning tomorrow evening. Today we're going to talk with the producers of the series and with you. How do you experience race and racial identity on a daily basis? If you made a personal portrait of yourself, would it include race? How is your experience of race different than your parents', and do you want your children to see race as part of their identity? Give us a call at 1-800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, or send us email, totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Orlando Bagwell, executive producer of the series Matters of Race and president of Roja Productions, the production company responsible for the series. And thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Neil. Thanks for having me on.
You've been producing documentaries about race in America for, I guess, almost 20 years now. Your credits include Eyes on the Prize, Malcolm X, Make It Plain, Africans in America. What prompted you to take this series on, and how does it differ from your previous work?
Well, for a long time, I've been, as you said, I've been doing historical pieces that talk about race as kind of like the centerpiece of the stories that I'm engaged in. And coming out, especially after doing Africans in America, which really in many ways we were talking about the early construction of race around the whole around slavery, that I was looking for a way to kind of talk about how we're living it today. And as fortune has it, when you're looking for a film to do, someone comes along and says, "Well, we want you to do something like that." And I was approached by the National Minority Consortia, which is a group of groups that represent filmmakers of color in the PBS system, and they were looking to do a program on race, an hour program. And so I started reading with some friends, looking at writers who were writing about race, and I realized that there was something very different about the discussion of race that I was looking at in these books than what I'd been reading in a lot of the history books that I'd been reading. And that was something about a changing America, an America that had changed dramatically, say, in the last 20 to 25 years. And the voices you heard in this discussion were much broader, much, much larger and much broader, and represented many more people within society. So we started thinking about that, and many of those writers were writing from their own lives as well, and using their lives to talk about the meaning of race in their own discussion of this identity that they were considering as an American identity. And we thought that was a good way to kind of start a discussion about race and to think about it, how we're living it today and thinking about it today.
Yeah, what does it mean, and what does it mean to you? It's a very individual question, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And as we started the research and started writing treatments to produce the films, we organized a group of scholars, and they looked at our treatment of these personal stories and said, that's pretty good. But, you know, all of these people have to take these ideas about race in terms of what it means to them individually and take them outside to a public world, to a world. And that means you have to take it where you encounter other people, whether that's on the playground or whether it's at work or in school and places like that. And they challenged us to then take these stories maybe and to maybe surround them with stories of places in America. So then we started traveling around the country and looking for where race was a very real aspect of maybe a town like we did in Siler City in North Carolina, or an institution like we found in a hospital in South Central Los Angeles, yeah. Or on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota with the Lakota people there, or around the whole issue of sovereignty and sovereignty rights for Native Hawaiians. But we also felt that this discussion of race was also a discussion across generations, and we were challenged to think about how it is a part of a new generation of Americans, and what are they thinking about race? People, young people who have think of the civil rights movement as distant history, maybe, mm-hmm. and how they see race as a part of their lives, but also how do they envision this thing that's been a part of America for so long in the future, and as a future part of the country that they will inherit.
You mentioned Siler City, North Carolina. It's part of a changing America that you describe in the first hour of the documentary series. Let's listen to a clip from it. This is the Reverend Neil Knight of the Church of God in Siler City describing the changes in his town.
Nobody ever come together. There was never any functions in the community where they were black and white combined. Black people were not even allowed to eat in the restaurants. Traditionally, for anyone in this town, it was a black and white culture. But in the last few years, the Latino culture moving in from Mexico or wherever they come from has infiltrated the town, and now that we're just about a third black, a third white, and a third Latino. And so for these cultures to come in now, it has changed the whole picture of the town.
That, an excerpt from hour one of a four-part series that begins airing on PBS stations later this week, tomorrow night, in fact. Orlando Bagwell is the executive producer of the Matters of Race series. And Orlando, you know, you look at that, you know, example of Siler City, and, you know, clearly one of the things that's changing in America is, well, as he put it there, they saw it as a biracial issue, two races, now it's three.
Well, it seems for a long time. America's always been a very diverse country, you know, many different people, many from many different places. But it seems the discussion of race has always been kind of discussed within the context of black and white. And this is one of the reasons why we decided to go to Siler City, because here was a town that historically had been defined by, you know, the black and white terms. And suddenly it was being dramatically transformed, and that transformation had a lot was changing the culture of the town, but it was also challenging people around the whole question of jobs, the whole around issues of class and living and communities, but at the same time there was a very real consideration of race in the context of color, you know, darkness versus lightness.
Mm-hmm.
And so We were looking at it as a kind of example of things that are happening, of something that was happening not just in Siler City, but throughout the America, where, in fact, you know, here's a country that's been built by successive waves of immigration, but suddenly, how do you deal with race when the color lines that revolve around those that are represented by new immigrants is no longer easily drawn? That, in fact, it's not. It is challenging, you know, our old notions of race, but at the same time bringing new voices to the discussion of race.
And changing, I assume, old enmities and creating new kinds of allies in all kinds of curious ways.
Exactly, especially when you're talking about people who are competing for jobs, who are talking about the communities they live in and the houses, the homes they live in, and how those things are changing. Suddenly, alliances are built across lines that you never felt were possible before. But those lines that are being and those alliances are not necessarily in the best interests of everyone there or in the best interests of the town.
Now, hour two takes place in the King Drew County Medical Center in South Central Los Angeles. You personally produced this particular episode. What impressed you about your experience talking to people at a hospital, and why set a documentary about race in a hospital?
Well, again, we're in a hospital where a community is in transition, and you have a hospital that was born out of that has a very rich history. This hospital was born out of the struggle of the people. It came out of the strong demand by the residents of South Central at that time, which was a community of black people after the Watts riots, and saying, we need a hospital in this community. We're a community that has very our access to hospital is quite difficult, and we have to travel very far to get there. And this hospital, in many ways, was a representation of a long period of struggle and community organizing. And suddenly the community is changing, and the hospital is being challenged to change with the community. And the question in the hospital then becomes, those people who are in power in the hospital, are they being racist because they are not accepting people into jobs there, accepting people into decision-making jobs within the hospital because of who they are, because of difference, because of race. And so the hospital itself began to have a lot of tension within it, but also coming from without around this whole question of being called racist because of its reluctance to hire outside of the black community.
Our telephone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address TOTN at NPR.org. And let's join Rob, who's on the line with us in Savannah, Georgia.
Hi, Neil. I am a white person from the Deep South, and I recently graduated from college. I went to school in the rural Ohio and up north with a lot of northern students. Something, and one of my main focuses in my studies was African-American studies. Something I noticed when trying to engage in dialogue about race is that, you know, the political correct atmosphere really caused a real breakdown in any real candid dialogue. And I was wondering if the panel could just comment on that a little bit.
If you could give me an example of what you mean.
Well, for instance, you know, even in a student in a seminar that was all white, people would be afraid to even note that there were differences in race when, you know, I think that there are a lot of differences in race, and that's what makes this country great. You know, there's different cultures and different races, but people will say, hey, there's nothing different about the races, or people will be afraid to say the word black, you know, and they just, it really broke down any real candid dialogue, I thought.
Orlando Bagwell, what do you think about that?
Well, I think the caller is exactly right. I think that this is one of the reasons why we felt we wanted to engage in this series and this work, because oftentimes we don't really even want to begin a conversation around race unless there's crisis, unless we're faced with some sort of confrontation or some sort of violence or something. Suddenly it's on the burner, but it's something we live with every day, yet we're not comfortable talking about it in our normal course of conversation. And I think that one of the things that we're trying to do with this series is to create stories of people's lives. And within those lives, whether they're personal or in a hospital or in a town, there are opportunities to see that this is something that we live with, and therefore we have to find a way where, in fact, we can talk about it the same way we talk about other things we live with. And I think he's exactly right that the only way you begin to resolve those things is to find that space where, in fact, we can engage in that kind of conversation. It's not an easy one. And what we're looking for is to try and present these stories of people's lives and these places where people live and are interacting as possibly a way to enter those conversations.
And one of the reasons that those conversations are difficult, and I know this comes up in the context of the question of, well, can black people at this hospital in South Central Los Angeles be racist? It comes up because the sting of that accusation, you're a racist, that's so devastating.
Well, I think one of the things that one of our interviews in the series says is that we, you know, we live with this long history of race in this country, and it's a history that we live with, and it stings in a lot of different ways for all of us, depending on where we are positioned in that history. And we bring all of that to the conversation, but we also bring it to our lives every day. Now, the thing is that we can't live with that history. We can't live in that history. We have to live with it. And oftentimes we find it difficult to separate ourselves from that when we find ourselves in these conversations, because in many ways, we, you know, all of the things that come with, you know, our place within those histories, whether it's guilt, whether it's, whether it's guilt or whether we feel, you know, the pain of that history, or whether we feel that, you know, that we are shame. It's all a part of what comes to the conversation. In some way, we have to recognize that and be willing to kind of not just work with that, but at the same time acknowledge that that's real. And acknowledge that in other people's voices and in the things that they say and how they say, you know, they talk about this subject.
Rob, thanks very much for the phone call. We're talking with Orlando Bagwell about a new documentary series titled Matters of Race. After the break, writer Eric Liu will join us. We hope you do too. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is TOTN at NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We'll be right back. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the meaning of race with the producers of Matters of Race, a new documentary series. It starts airing on PBS this week, tomorrow night, in fact. Our guest is Orlando Bagwell, who's the executive producer. If you'd like to join our conversation, our phone number is 800-989-8255. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Who determines the meaning of race? Is it a private definition or a public one? Again, the phone number is 800-989-8255. And joining the conversation now from member station KUOW in Seattle is Eric Liu. Liu is the author of the Accidental Asian, Notes of a Native Speaker. He's a commentator in the Matters of Race series. And Eric Liu, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
There's a passage from your book that's included in this series. We heard just a bit of it at the beginning of the program, and I was wondering if you could read it for us.
I'd be glad to. What maketh a race? To people in China, the Chinese constitute a single race, except, that is, for those Chinese who aren't Chinese, those who aren't of the dominant Han group, like the Miao or the Yao or the Zhuang or whatever. They belong to separate races. To the Japanese, who certainly think of themselves as a race, the Chinese, Indians, and Koreans are all separate races. To the Koreans, the Filipinos are. To the Filipinos, the Vietnamese, and so on. To the Anglos who founded the United States, the Irish, who arrived in great waves in the early 19th century, were a separate race. To the Germans who killed Jews last century, and the French who watched, the Jews were a separate race. To the blacks of America, the Anglos and the Irish and the Germans and the French and the Jews have always ended up being part of the same and separate race.
And you can go back and spin that as many ways as you want. It's almost like a Mobius loop, because then to the Anglos, of course, all of those different Asian races are one race, Asians.
That's absolutely right. I think the point of that passage is twofold. I mean, the first thing is that racial categories that we subscribe to so much in our everyday lives are not these God-given fixed things. They are man-made, in many ways, arbitrary things. But the second point of that passage is that even given the fact that these categories are arbitrary, once they're made, it's not just a parlor game we're playing. Once they're made, these categories end up importing a great amount of social significance, and what gets attached to them is power. And no matter how you slice race, no matter which labels you want to use or which categories you want to use, no matter how you slice it, somebody, some group always ends up sliced at the bottom.
Hmm. Orlando Bagwell, wanted to get you back in and ask you, as given what Eric has just been talking about, clearly the meaning of one's race depends, it's that question, we all look in that mirror in the morning, who do we see, what color skin is it, how important is that, but that changes depending on where you are.
This is so true. I think one of the things that we keep going back and forth on this show, and I think it's very, is that race can mean everything and it can mean nothing. We can determine on our own terms that for me individually, race might not have any meaning. That I can say that in my own identity and how I look at other people, it's not going to affect how I address or think of myself or address other people. But at the same time, I do have to walk outside, and outside, race is very real, and it can have a real effect on whether how I am accepted in a place or rejected in a place, whether or not I am able to get a job or maybe not get a job. And at the same time, it can also be very unreal. I can think that I'm not getting that job because this guy doesn't like me because of my race. Well, that could be true or not, but that's also a very subjective decision. And we live with it in all these different ways. And I think that one of the things that we're trying to show the audience in the film is that this is what we've kind of constructed, and this is what we're living with, and it's not something that is special to me, but it's something that we all share.
Here's a question. We got an email from Abby Spring in Portland, Oregon. My question might seem silly, but I've been searching for the definition of race on the internet, and I haven't come up with anything clear. How does your guest define race? Is there a real scientific definition? And Eric Liu will send that hot potato right in your lap.
I don't think there is a real scientific definition. Quite frankly, biologists and geneticists will tell you that the notion that you should be able to slice the human race into 5 or 4 or 7 or 16 different categories based essentially on a few random traits that include skin color, hair texture, eye color, things like that, is borders on the absurd.
And
so
it, It gets even crazier, Orlando Beck, when we start talking about Latinos as a race, when this is a language cultural group that can include light-skinned Spaniards and people as dark as anything from the Dominican Republic.
Well, this is so true, and that's another thing that keeps coming back, and the whole language of race and what when are we using it, and when are we talking about ethnicity, when are we talking about color, how do we use it, and I think that's part of the dilemma that we find ourselves in.
Let's get a caller in. Robin joins us now on the line from Temple Hills, North Carolina.
Hi.
Hi.
Just a little bit about my background. I'm married to a man from China who immigrated about 7 years ago, and we have three young children who then are biracial. But we, I guess my question has to do with, to what degree does race have to do with ethnicity, cultural practices, linguistic ability, et cetera? And I guess that we prefer not to use the language of race per se, but to attempt to have the children feel comfortable in both broadly understood cultural context, if there is such a thing. We are fortunate to have our oldest in kindergarten in a dual language program in Chapel Hill, where he has an English curriculum in the morning and Chinese in the afternoon with children from various backgrounds. Some have no experience with Chinese, and some have no experience with English, and some are bilingual like my son. So I guess that I also teach at the University of North Carolina. I teach Chinese language to Chinese heritage students, so with various degrees of linguistic ability. So I face these questions on a daily basis, both at home and in my job. I wonder if your panel could just comment again on these categories and how we try to speak about them in more concrete or more meaningful ways. They become such fluid categories.
Well, I'll certainly put it to the panel, but let me begin by asking you, what do you mean when you say race?
Well, I feel very uncomfortable with the term, especially because I grew up in a predominantly European, Northern European immigrant and African American racial environment, and race always played out along black, white lines and in very specific senses. And so, and as Eric just read, and I'm familiar with his book, race is such a fluid concept depending on the history of the particular nation and culture that you're talking about. So I frankly feel very uncomfortable myself with the term and try to avoid it if possible.
Eric, you don't avoid it.
Well, I think that, this caller just raises so many profound big questions, and the biggest one of them is how you kind of slice race against culture. The idea that these two things are intertwined is something that you can challenge, again, when you just look at our caller. And in many ways, our caller, I would guess, if she's teaching Chinese language, speaks Chinese better than I do, probably reads Chinese better than I do. And the question then is of who is more culturally Chinese is actually an open question. My Chinese is so-so, but, there are plenty of people who I know and who are listening today right now whose command not only of the language but of the culture and the history and the traditions of the China that my parents came from is much stronger than my own. And so I'm racially Chinese. You look at me and I'm Chinese. But culturally, my Chineseness is not quite as strong. And so I think it only, again, gives lie to the idea that biology is, in a cultural sense, destiny. But I think, for our caller and her children, the reality, too, as Orlando said it, I think Orlando said it absolutely right, which is that ultimately our kids have to go outside. My daughter is biracial as well, and we're trying to raise her, too, with a very mixed sense of her inheritances. But the reality is that when she goes out into the world and into schools and onto the streets, people are either going to see her as Asian or not. And depending on how they see her, they're going to treat her different ways.
Robin, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but I suspect that one of the reasons you're uncomfortable, and so many of us are comfortable with the idea of race, is that somehow, we should be beyond it. We should be starting to see things that are far more important than the color of one's skin or somebody's, cultural heritage background, that this shouldn't be a problem, yet we all know that it is. Eric, what do you think about the idea that as the world becomes more complicated, as Robin raises her children, as you raise yours, as the next generations come, the idea of race is going to be less important than it has been in America?
Neil, I think the greatest service that we all could do on this subject is to get folks who are listening and thinking about this subject to learn how to accommodate two, in some ways, contradictory realities in their head at the same time. You know, one is what you just described, which is that on an individual level, because of intermarriage and racial and cultural intermingling, the idea of race and of racial categories is becoming blurrier than ever. There's no question of that reality, especially for the younger generation. But the other reality, too, whether you're talking about Siler City, North Carolina, where the first episode of the series takes place, or Seattle, Washington, for that matter, the other reality is that still, when you look at very basic things about how people live their lives, housing, jobs, economic opportunity, educational opportunity, race still divides things in a profound, in some ways, intractable way. These two things are, in some ways, in opposition, but it's not like one is correct and one is wrong. It's not like one represents reality accurately and the other doesn't. They're both part of our reality, and quite frankly, I think for the next generation or two, they're both going to remain part of our reality. And I think the sooner we can accommodate both of those and then start talking, the better.
Eric Liu, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Eric Liu is a commentator on the Matters of Race series, the author of The Accidental Asian, Notes of a Native Son. He joined us from member station KUOW in Seattle. Still with us is Orlando Bagwell, who's the executive producer of the Matters of Race series. And joining us now is another of his contributors in our New York bureau is Phil Bertelsen, an independent filmmaker and one of the program producers for Matters of Race. And good of you to be with us today.
Thanks for having me.
You're produced a documentary within a documentary called Every Other. It's one of three mini-docs that sort of examine how race is understood by younger people. And let's listen to a clip from your contribution now.
Strange. To wake up and find yourself up for a debate. That's what happened to me just the other morning. I woke up to find it was a brand new day in America. Everybody looked the same, but everything seemed, well, different. For a moment, I was confused. I thought I'd died and gone to Berkeley. But then I read the news. Today was the big day. I had to either stand up and be counted as black.
I'm black and I'm me. Now who you gonna be?
Or join forces with this new group, affectionately known as the Mulatto Nation.
Mulattoes unite! Take back!
Mulattoes unite, take back the night, or take back the white. I'm not sure what it is there. Phil,
take back the white.
Take back the white. Tell us what's going on there. That's a complicated scene.
It is. In fact, it's a satire. It's a bit of fiction written by Danzy Senna, which we intermingle with the nonfiction element of the story, and it essentially reflects the inner drama of a multiracial woman on Census Day 2000, when for the first time in history she was faced with the option of choosing more than one race to classify herself.
We're speaking with Phil Bertelsen, as an independent film producer, and with executive producer Orlando Bagwell about the new series Matters of Race. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Orlando, why did you decide to make this last hour, which includes Phil's contribution, how did you decide to define that?
Well, we felt that one of the things we wanted to do was to produce an hour that that represented a new generation, a generation that inherited a lot of the history of race from parents and the pets, but at the same time had a fresh vision of who they were and how race fit into their identity. One of the shows in the piece is Every Other, which looks at the census, the 2000 census, and the whole question of mixed race identity.
Mm-hmm.
Another show is about a young Cambodian boy, young man who's an immigrant, a first generation in San Francisco, and who he's trying to become. What does it mean to become American? What do you model after? How do you become that? And the last show is about a young couple who are 26 and 27, and they have four children. They're Navajo and Apache, and they're talking about what do they pass on in terms of what do they pass on to their children around this whole question of identity and what will be important to them in terms of moving on and living the life that they would like to live.
Let's get one more caller in. Whitney's on the line with us from Indianapolis.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I was calling just to talk a little bit about my own experience. I guess that I'm black, and my husband is white, and I grew up in an area that was really, really white. And so when I was younger, I always felt myself so different, I guess, because I was made to feel that way, even though now as an adult, it's different because, you know, I'm blue-eyed and fairly light, and so it's just odd for me how my own racial, not my identity, my own personal identity hasn't changed, but the way I guess I'm accepted and seen, and now I think of it a lot because I am in an interracial, I mean, I don't like that term, you know, race, but interracial marriage, and I'm raising a biracial child who, I don't know, I don't know that I have anything specific to say. I'm sorry, but...
Oh, no, this is fascinating, Whitney. How old is your child? Asking questions about his or her identity yet?
Well, see, that's the thing. He is only one, and right now, it's been really easy, but I struggle with it in terms of thinking, where are we going to live? Where are we going to put him in school? How will it be? Because I taught, and so I know that even though I think we've come a long way, you know, I see from, you know, the school and having taught and how unequal things are that we still have a big, major problem. And so it's hard to reconcile that with how easy in some ways it has been for me and my husband. I wonder if in some aspect, and for some reason that's because he's white and I'm black and that makes it easier than if it were the other way around.
I'm not sure there are any easy answers to these questions, Whitney.
No, I guess there aren't. I guess I just raise more questions, but... you know, I like to hear that we're discussing it and think about it. I think about it all the time. I don't know that everybody does. I think that in our society, maybe if you're white, you might not have to. I mean, maybe you should have to, but maybe some people don't feel it every day the way some of us do.
Phil Bertelsen, you talk to people about some of these same issues, certainly about identity.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the fact of the matter is, I mean, census data shows that the two or more race population is, in fact, experiencing one of the largest growths in this country, second only to Asians. And as our recent callers have demonstrated, they themselves are in interracial relationships, raising biracial or multiracial children. So I think it's going to become an increasing dialogue, if you will, among citizens of this country.
I'd like to add that it's just in the way that the caller was talking about the conclusions that they have reached in their own home, yet at the same time, in thinking about schools and what to do with their child, there's a very real recognition of a concern around the reality of race that, you know, it is this very real thing in our lives. And I think she's exactly right. The more we're able to kind of talk about it and engage it, the better we're gonna, the more chance we have of coming to some real conclusions or answers in terms of how to envision a different future.
Whitney, thanks very much for the phone call, and Phil Bertelsen, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Neil.
Phil Bertelsen, an independent filmmaker, a program producer for the Matters of Race series, will wrap up our conversation with Orlando Bagwell after a short break. This is NPR News. Thank you. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, a congressional inquiry is scheduled to release a detailed report on allegations of sexual misconduct at the U.S. Air Force Academy. We'll have details and reaction tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Right now, we're finishing our conversation on the Matters of Race series that begins airing tomorrow night on PBS. Our guest is Orlando Bagwell, executive producer of the PBS series. And if you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. And let's get a caller on the line. Mary Jane is with us from Indianapolis.
Hello, yes.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Great. Well, I am black, and I grew up 20 miles away from Indianapolis, where I am now.
Mm-hmm.
My parents are both white and adopted me in Kenya, Africa, and moved to Indianapolis. So I was saying that I've always felt, well, at least as I was growing up, that although I knew my blackness should be great, I felt like it was stifling because I could see beyond it. Nobody in the town I grew up with seemed to be able to do that.
Hmm.
So my husband is white, we looked for a place once we got married that we could, my husband was in the military, which is very, mixed. Everybody lived together pretty happily. And so when we got out of the military, we found a place here in Indianapolis that there are lots of our neighbors are multicultural and it's not a big deal. So I feel like, I can let my guard down or whatever you want to say and be comfortable where I'm at. But, you struggle with your children, letting them know it's okay that they can recognize black, white, whatever part of their being that they feel comfortable with and not feel held back with it. And I feel like so many of my hang-ups, I feel like they may be holding them back a little bit. So, it's always a fear. So,
were you surprised to find that sort of a community where you feel comfortable 20 miles away from where you grew up?
Oh, it's very strange. Of course, I grew up in the 70s and 80s where I'm from. And so, it is a different town, a different time. There was no Latino population at all when I was growing up. And now, I'm so happy. I was so excited to move back here and see that, people are opening up a lot more. So,
well, Orlando Bagwell, let me bring you in on this exact point, which I think is an important one in your series. And that's the idea that those of us of a certain age, that line in the Supreme Court's Michigan decision about affirmative action in colleges, and they say we should look forward to being a colorblind or at least legally colorblind society in 10 years, and some of us would say this is unrealistic, to put it mildly. Others, and perhaps Mary Jane, and perhaps some of the people that we hear about in the fourth program in the series, the younger people, might not see that as quite so far fetched.
We hope not.
Well, I think that there are two pieces. And one thing I would like to say to Mary Jane, there's an interesting story in the series from a woman by the name of Jane Lazar. She's a writer, wrote a book called Beyond the Whiteness of Whiteness, who is in an interracial marriage and talks about raising her sons and their questions to her about race as they're growing up. And it's funny because in the end she says she comes to a conclusion that her sons would be seen in society as black and they will see themselves as black and being black and Jewish, but never really seeing themselves, not being able to take on the identity of whiteness. And that was an interesting notion but it's interesting. It would be interesting to look at her story. I think it's a very strong and powerful story in a series. But getting back to your question, the whole idea of colorblind, there was one in the hospital story. One of the journalists who's covering the hospital says that because the hospital is named after Dr. King, it should find some way to become a colorblind institution where everybody can sit at the table equally. And I think that's an idea that I think we would all like to see. But there was another man who came on after and said, well, I'd never want to live in a colorblind society because, in fact, I want to be able to. I don't want you to not see my color, just like
exactly.
that. In fact, I really want you to see my color, and it's not a matter of not seeing it. I want to see your color just like you see mine. But I want you to respect mine just like I respect yours, just like I respect your gender, just like I respect other parts of you. But color is something that's very much a part of who we are, and this idea that in fact some way color represents. It's like it goes back to the early question: who determines the meaning of difference,
right.
And who benefits from that determination? And I think we have to kind of question those things and realize that we will always be a very multicolored multiracial society. The question is, what do we do with that, and how do we live with that, and make it work?
Do you think that people have a hard time embracing people's differences and at the same time not seeing there being any difference? Do you understand what I mean? I think it's hard, so hard for people to not want to single out people by their differences. And I don't know how you can – I don't really like the idea of colorblindness either. I mean, I would like for people to see that I am black. You know, I don't feel like I should have to be lumped in. I mean, the old saying that I heard so many times is, I almost forget you're black, you know, which is not a great – you know, people think that's a compliment, I think, when they would say it to me, but it really wasn't. And that's not what I'm looking for. I don't want you to forget that I'm black just because I may sound like you. For whatever reason, you're thinking that I should sound totally different, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, it hits on so many. I mean, Eric Liu was talking about, you know, obviously, mm-hmm. You know, who speaks Chinese, who
right.
speaks with an accent,
right.
who's American, and that's another part of the series. Mary Jane, we're going to have to leave it with that profound question and move on. But
thank you very much for the call.
Appreciate it.
All right, bye-bye.
And Orlando Bagwell, good luck with the series.
Oh, thank you.
Orlando Bagwell is executive producer of the Matters of Race series. Part one begins airing on public television stations around the country tomorrow night.